Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news as it happens. Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. Happy holidays and welcome to the weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week.
A special Christmas program this week as we take a look back on some of our favorite interviews from this past year. A list that's made up of market movers, legendary entrepreneurs, and a couple of entertainers that you may be familiar with.
That's for sure. I gotta say, coming up with this list, not so easy, Tim. We have so many great guests. We have so many great guests throughout the year, but we did whittle it down to a few. And over the next couple of hours, we're going to hear from the likes of Michael Dell, John Rogers of Arrow Investments, Kathy Wood of ARK, and the former CEO of Google. We're talking about Eric Schmidt. Remember when he was the adult in the room?
Yeah, that was a different era, not just for Google, but for tech in general. We're also going to take a trip down memory lane with music legend Gina Schock, the Go-Go's drummer and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. We're also going to talk film and television production in the time of COVID with award-winning actor Sam Heughan. I don't have to tell you this, Carol, because you're such a big fan.
Where have I seen him?
The star of Outlander, among many other things.
I do recall that. He's also big into whiskey. We'll talk about that. All of that to come. We begin with a voice very familiar to our Bloomberg audience, TPG Capital Executive Chairman and founding partner, Jim Coulter.
I think increasingly there is what I think of as a new era of business, and perhaps we can get into that. Companies are going to be held accountable not just for what they do, but for how they do it. For example, if you look deeply into the ESG world today, companies that are highly rated on ESG standards, according to a recent Bank of America report, have 10% lower cost of capital. So capital is looking to invest in companies that care, that deliver on ESG ratings. There's still a lot of uncertainty as to what those ratings will be over time, how they'll develop, but to be clear, the trend is happening and it makes a difference how you do things.
And we definitely are seeing something on the regulatory front when it comes to that, Jim. But I do wonder, we talk about, like, when a company reports earnings, certainly for the publicly held companies, do we need to have, okay, top, bottom line, we're looking at margins, but we also are looking at, okay, here's your ESG metric. And if you don't do well, you get penalized. There's got to be some consequences. Do we get to that point? Do we need to have that kind of point?
I think we will get there over time, but we can't wait for it. What the market is looking for, what I'm looking for as an investor, is authenticity in action. I'd remind you, Carol, that it took 70 years to develop GAAP, our accounting standards, and it will take a while to develop the standards that will lead the ESG era, but we can't afford to wait. We need to get to work, and capital is flowing to these opportunities.
Well, one of that is, you know, Tim and I were talking about and kind of planning for this about everything that MBA students, Tim, you have an MBA.
I do, yeah, from a couple of years ago.
In terms of what you study, leadership is such a big part in terms of getting there, right? So what is it that the MBA student today on Stanford's, you know, here at Stanford or elsewhere, what do they need to be learning when it comes to leadership? Because I think it's safe to say that a lot of people would say leadership failed us in the last couple of years.
I think they need to learn to lead in a new era. Now, business changes every day, but there's times where business ethos change. When I got out of business school in 1986, a long time ago, we were studying Japanese business practices. In the 90s, the ethos changed to the Jack Welch era, where suddenly strategic planning and KPIs drove everything. 2000, it changed radically again, where suddenly we were told to move fast and break things. The era of entrepreneurship, where Stanford leads. Today, there's a new era, a new ethos developing. As I said, it's not only what you do, but how you do it.
Jim, there is this conversation happening right now about the value of education, especially really expensive education. So make the case to us, to our viewers, to future MBA students that the MBA is still worth it.
Yeah. For me, in 1986, I walked out of Stanford, and it was a special place then. It remains a special place today. There's something in the air, ideas, innovation, risk-taking. And at that moment, I chose to take the lowest paying job I was offered. I entered an industry that didn't have a name. Fast forward 30 years, that industry is now called private equity. It's $4 trillion. I've helped build organizations within it. And today I'm sitting here talking about how to drive a new idea, impact investing. So Stanford's motto is change lives, change organizations, change the world. It changed my life. It allowed me to change organizations, and we're working hard on changing the world. That has immense value. It doesn't play out necessarily always in year one, although it did for me, but it plays out over the arc of a career.
So you said 30 years you walked into private equity, and just earlier this year, you're executive chairman still of the company that you founded, but yet you're not CEO or head of the company anymore. I do wonder what it's like for a founder coming on the heels of KKR, right? Another legendary private equity firm, and they have set in place their succession plan. How do you as a founder think about succession and the next step for your company as a leader?
Well, succession is out there for me, but what I constantly have to ask myself as a leader is, what is my highest and best use? We had a co-CEO structure, and my highest and best use is actually to invest and to innovate. So I chose to evolve my focus to this question of, how can business make a difference in society? How can we address this intersection of social responsibility and corporate effectiveness? And that ability to continue to invest and innovate is liberating, and is something that I think is good for me and good for the company.
That was Jim Coulter, executive chairman and co-founder of the private equity firm TPG Capital, also co-managing partner of the Rise Fund and a member of Stanford's Board of Trustees. That interview from mid-October is part of our Stanford B-School special.
Coming up, another investment luminary tackles a different set of social issues in the business world. We're talking about diversity in finance and financial literacy. We've got a conversation with the chairman, co-CEO, and chief investment officer of Arrow Investments, John Rogers.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week and some of our many highlights for 2021. This is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
Our Christmas weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week is a look back at some of our favorite conversations from the past year, one in which retail traders emerged as a market moving force. That was a big theme of the year, Tim.
It really was a big theme. And our next guest is on the board of corporate giants like Nike, McDonald's, and the New York Times. He's also chairman, co-CEO, and chief investment officer of Ariel Investments. We're talking about John Rogers.
He joined me and Bloomberg News New York Deputy Bureau Chief Shartia Brantley back in July and expressed concern that novice traders, particularly from communities of color, are not yet fully equipped for long-term investing success.
I do worry about it. And the good sign is we're getting more and more African-American investors, and you know, places like Charles Schwab have really democratized the stock market, and it's very cheap to get involved, and you can do everything online and not be intimidating by traditional white shoe investment firms. So all that is really, really good. But the downside is, often this happened with the internet bubble at the turn of the century. We get pulled in the market, get sucked into the latest themes too often because we haven't been as engaged in the stock market as white Americans. So I do worry that we're getting pulled into some of these risky areas at exactly the wrong time. And we know, you know, the way that we came to this country, the traditions that we had to fight against, the Jim Crow, and all the challenges that we faced in our community put us behind the eight ball when it came to investing and getting comfortable in the markets. And so again, whenever we get pulled in, I do worry sometimes where it's late in the game.
Well, let's talk about financial literacy and how that plays into alleviating your concerns.
Well, you know, I think we need to continue to do more and more. We have just scratched the surface when it comes to financial literacy. You know, during the Obama administration, I had the privilege to be able to, chair his council on financial capability for young Americans. And we talked to the president about how can we get more financial institutions to partner with urban public schools to teach kids about the market, give the kids real dollars to invest in real stocks, be role models for young people of color to get engaged in the financial services sector as career choices. So I think we have a long way to go because it's just so critically important that, you know, African Americans get exposed to the markets at young ages. You know, we know the wealth gap in this country has gotten larger and larger. We've fallen further behind because of the historical discrimination that we face in this country. So the way to catch up is to get folks involved in the best parts of the economy where the wealth and jobs are being created today, and learning about the magic of compound interest and getting comfortable in equities. Because we all know when you get a job now, you have to be your own money manager with your 401k plan. So financial literacy is more important in this country than ever.
John, how do we get there? The reason I ask is I actually came across a Federal Reserve paper that was done by a researcher about 10 years ago, I think, talking about the importance of financial literacy. I think about someone like, you know, Warren Buffett, who talked about compound interest, like knew it when he was at a young age. We have been talking about the importance of financial literacy across society for a long time. And I wonder, how do we really move the needle on this? Because I agree that this is something that unlocks kind of the financial, is the key that kind of unlocks financial wealth for more Americans and certainly for Black Americans.
Well, you know, I think one of the things I talk about all the time, you know, my father bought stocks for me every birthday and every Christmas after I was 12 years old. And I got exposed to the markets at an early age and loved it. You know, there's a program in New York, New York City Rise, that is doing that with young people, getting kids into 529 programs at, you know, right in kindergarten and on the way. And at the Ariel Community Academy, that's now 25 years old, we give kids real money to invest in real stocks, and they get to see the money grow from kindergarten through eighth grade. And I think that's just so important. You got to get exposure, you know, get your hands a little dirty with the markets, learning how to do the research, seeing the inevitable ups and downs, but seeing how markets steadily climb even after you have some ups and downs. We come back from downturns and bounce higher. So I can't overemphasize the importance for corporate America to work with public schools, get public schools to have robust financial literacy programs, and get volunteers from the corporate community to get in there and talk with kids about how to do the research and the magic of our capitalist democracy, you know, that really builds wealth over time.
Just a quick follow, should it be mandatory in schools? I personally think that kids should be starting in kindergarten learning about financial literacy. Make it part of the curriculum. Do you think that's what needs to be done?
I think that's really critical. I think that's exactly right. You know, I know local communities make the decisions on their own local schools. It's hard to dictate that federally, but it's, you know, I always joke with my friend Arne Duncan, the former Secretary of Education, that, you know, the French class is maybe not as important as that financial literacy class. You know, I think I've been to France five times in my life, and I spent 5 years studying French. Financial literacy is so important to our economy and so important to our country and all communities.
Well, there have just been so many efforts, if you will, announced post George Floyd. You know, your organization has launched Project Black. Can you just tell our audience a little bit more about that and what has been the response so far?
Well, our co-CEO created Project Black in partnership with J.P. Morgan Chase and Jamie Dimon. You know, Melody Hobson had this vision, this idea that we would create a fund that would build stronger Black-owned and Latinx businesses and get them to scale. We feel like too many of the programs are all about helping small micro businesses get small loans to build their businesses. We feel we want to help build capital for companies to be really scalable, where they can create real multi-generational wealth, hire hundreds if not thousands of people, and have a permanent impact on our society. At the same time, we'll work with decision makers at corporate America to encourage them to do business with minority businesses in the parts of the economy where the wealth and jobs are created today. You know, we know financial services, we know wealth's created in technology, media, et cetera. And sometimes well-meaning supplier diversity programs have not really encouraged minority businesses to have real opportunity in the parts of the economy, again, where the wealth's created today. So that's what Project Black's all about, is to make sure that corporate America is doing business with everyone and that we're building businesses of scale, which we think will have a real permanent impact and positive impact on our society. It's going extremely well. We're really busy out there. We have a great board of directors, a great CEO. It's just been off to a great, great start.
That was John Rogers, Chairman, Co-CEO, and Chief Investment Officer of Ariel Investments. He spoke with Carol and Bloomberg News New York Deputy Bureau Chief Shartia Brantley over the summer.
Coming up in our Bloomberg Business Week Christmas special, we head back to the Stanford Graduate School of Business. We'll hear from the founder and co-CEO of Minted, Mariam Nafisi, on her company's next big expansion. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger, put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, Bloomberg 1130 in New York, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991, to Boston, Bloomberg 1061, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Business Week.
One thing that started to return to a degree of normalcy to our lives this past year was our ability to travel for business. We were lucky enough to be able to do a handful of remote broadcasts in 2021, and it's really something we missed big time during the height of the pandemic. It felt good to be, quote unquote, a little bit normal here, Tim.
Yeah, it really did. And one of those programs took place at the Stanford Graduate School of Business in October. We traveled there to celebrate the school's repeat appearance atop Bloomberg Business Week's list of America's best B schools.
What's cool about it is we were able to engage with students, key faculty and administrators, as well as some of Stanford's most successful MBA recipients ever. And among them was a woman who has emerged as a pioneer of the creator economy.
We're talking about Mariam Nafisi. She's the founder and co-CEO of Minted. Her business focuses on stationery, and I know this because years ago, I used them for my wedding, as well as art, home goods, and digital content. Also, now Minted is expanding into furniture, having debuted its first line exclusively at West Elm earlier this year.
Well, I think the fundamental thread through all of these businesses is this idea that great talent can come from anywhere. Great ideas can come from anywhere. And so what we're trying to do is bring great, independent, unique art and design to people everywhere and empower artists around the globe to put their hat in the ring and then really build businesses off of our platform, regardless of where they were educated, where they're from, whether they had any connections to be able to get into business. This helps anyone really, you know, be part of a marketplace.
What are you finding is the best way to communicate what you're doing and how you're growing? Because I do think a lot of people know Minted for invitations. I mean, full disclosure, it's what we use for, you know, my wife and I use for our wedding. And I think people know it for holiday cards. But how do you then communicate that you're doing furniture as well?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I mean, we are targeting niche audiences through niche marketing. So, you know, you might not see it at the very highest level of corporate marketing, but we are marketing to different audiences. But I think also you'll see more brand building campaigns from us at the higher level this Christmas season, where we really are focusing on the artist as the common thread through all these businesses, so that I think people really understand that it's really about an artist marketplace and community that is participating across textiles, paper, furniture, wall art, many different goods, and but really centering it around the artist's story and their journey. And you'll see that coming out soon.
You are so great about highlighting other people's journeys and artists' journeys. But what about your own journey here? Because you didn't get accepted the first time around.
Yeah.
But you came back the next year. How did you make that happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's this idea of being persistent and fighting for what your dream is. And, you know, I had come into Stanford knowing I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I'd landed in California in 1993 after graduating from college. I'd spent some time at some other businesses in investment banking and consulting, and I knew that I wanted to carve my own path. I felt that if I'd gone more of the bigger corporate route, I wasn't sure if that was a good fit for me, or if I would be given the responsibility that I thought maybe in my 26-year-old mind I thought I maybe deserved. And so I really felt that the U.S. is, you know, I'm an immigrant to the U.S. Mm-hmm. I felt like this is really a country of great opportunity, and that the American consumer would be the ultimate judge of merit, that they wouldn't really care necessarily who made the product. If they liked the product, they would buy the product. And so I was really motivated around entrepreneurship as a way to create the world I wanted to live in and create the products I wanted to see.
Have you found that to be the case about the American consumer?
I do think so. I mean, this is one of the best things about being American is that we have this huge petri dish of like several hundred million consumers who can buy your product and test your product. So it's a fantastic, it's why we are so good at product development and marketing, actually, because we have a great petri dish. And so that's exactly what's happened. And that's why I wanted to pursue entrepreneurship and come to Stanford. So when I came out, I knew that that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. So what's the end game? And you know, it's a Bloomberg question. I mean, it's got to be nice being private but having investors involved, right? But I mean, is the ultimate goal to be a public company? How do you think about it? Because there are options today. I think it was a direct path. You stayed private for a long time, but as soon as you could, you get to the public markets. It doesn't have to be that way. There's a lot of cash out there with investor support to keep a business going for years. We see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're always trying to keep all options open. But, you know, it is an independent company in the sense that our artists are independent, too. It's a fungible community. People can come and go. And I think the idea of trying to capture that community inside another company is probably a little bit of a forced and kind of strange, probably.
Yeah.
So I think of ourselves as an independent business, that we're building an independent company, and certainly we could continue private financing or go public, and we're just preparing for both paths. We always keep ourselves prepared for both.
What a fun conversation. That was Miriam Nafisi. She's the founder and co-CEO of Minted. She joined us on campus at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, and that was back in October.
You're listening to the Christmas weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Some of our highlights when it comes to the interviews that we did over this past year. And coming up next, you're going to hear from one of the most successful innovators of all time.
Founder, chairman, and CEO of Dell Technologies, Michael Dell. He talked to us about a lot, including his new book. And that included a story about dinner with Carl Icahn. Love this part. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
We're bringing you some of our favorite conversations from the past year on this holiday weekend, and we're pleased now to look back on an interview with one of the biggest names in the history of America's tech sector.
When he first incorporated his company that he founded back in 1984, it was known as Dell Computer Corporation. At the time, Michael Dell was just 19 years old. I know, it's unbelievable. His story is incredible. Nearly four decades later, he detailed his climb to the top of his industry in a book called Play Nice But Win, A CEO's Journey from Founder to Leader.
In a wide-ranging conversation this past fall, the billionaire innovator spoke with us about the fight for tech talent, the dawn of an era to be dominated by artificial intelligence, and the time he tangled with Carl Icahn when the activist investor tried to impede Dell from taking his own company private back in 2013.
It was very hard. You know, I didn't really have much experience dealing with somebody who would just go on television and lie. You know, that's not something I had experienced very often in my business career. But, you know, ultimately, as I talked about in the book, I did go to his house and confront him and, you know, really saw that he didn't have any plan whatsoever for the company. And to him, it was just a big poker game. And it turned out to be way more difficult than I thought, as was chronicled on Bloomberg television and radio very extensively.
I remember it.
It was a story that never ended until it did. And fortunately, we were able to accelerate our transformation. Our shareholders got some of the benefits of our transformation if we were successful, which we turned out we were, without taking on any of the risk. And I learned how to face down Carl Icahn. So there you go.
Yeah. Hey, I'm wondering, Michael, if you miss the days of running a company that's private, that doesn't have a report card available to you each and every day, Monday through Friday, from 9:30 to 4 every day, where you watch the company's stock move. Because you do talk a little bit in the book about the way that big swings in the company's stock would make you feel, and the way that you thought that analysts and investors were missing it. Do you miss the days of not running a public company?
Well, I've done both, right? And the key for us was really putting the company on a different trajectory. And back in 2012 and 2013, the markets really didn't give us permission to go invest in those new areas. Now I think we're in a different spot, new capabilities, new growth rate, and new trajectory. And, you know, we also reignited that entrepreneurial spirit, which was the formation of the company, and very much kept that alive even as we transitioned back to being public again.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, and we've really leaned on, I think even more so during the pandemic, our leaders, right, of companies to help us get it through. I think about Black Lives Matter. And, you know, one of the things we wanted to ask you, and it feels like from reading your book, you don't play around too much or careful around politics. And I can understand that for CEOs. But, you know, your home state of Texas, I have a lot of family in Texas. You seem to be, you know, you really love that state. And you write a lot about it in your book. How do you feel about things like the abortion law and the voting rights one? Would you have spoken out about?
Yeah, I have spoken out about voting rights, and certainly we've communicated with our team members about some of the recent laws. Look, I would much rather see our policymakers focus on education and infrastructure and broadband and the things that will help the state continue to be successful. And as we've communicated to our team members, our belief is that they should have more access to healthcare, not less.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry though about some of these issues that it'll hurt Dell's ability to attract talent, especially in Austin, or generally speaking?
Haven't seen that problem yet. We'll see how it plays out. And our company will go where the talent is, and let's see also how the courts, rule on these things. And, I think there's still a lot that we don't know about how this plays out.
Hey, Michael, I want to stick on talent, because we have spoken to executives in recent months who've said, hey, the labor crunch that we're seeing, it's really across the spectrum from hourly employees all the way up to executives. Have you had to raise wages to attract and retain talent?
Well, you're always adjusting, compensation and benefits. I'm pretty pleased with our attrition. Our data says, we're in the you know, kind of lower quartile of attrition. So haven't really had an enormous challenge there, as I know many companies have. And look, our job is to create an inspiring and passionate environment where people can do their very best work. And we attract a lot of young people into our company, give them those opportunities. I think if we keep doing that, we'll be just fine.
EMC, it is a company that we know. We've all talked about it. The king of growing storage device market. We know cloud computing is changing all of this. We were talking with some of our colleagues, a former EMC executive telling them that EMC was once the last great storage companies. There'll never be another one. So what is the future of that market in your view? And how do you think Dell specifically can benefit from that?
Well, the interesting thing is if you peel back the onion on just about anything that's going on, you were talking about crypto earlier, mm-hmm. decentralized finance, autonomous vehicles, just pick your new thing that's happening. Behind all of that is an enormous amount of data. And, it turns out you need a lot of cloud infrastructure, no matter where it is, and you need a lot of data to make all these things happen. And so, as the number one company in the world that provides all of that, we're seeing some really nice growth in those areas. So I think the world's kind of figuring out, public cloud is a thing, but it's not just the public cloud, it's multi-cloud, it's also the edge, and there's enormous growth going on as everything in the world becomes intelligent and connected. And now with 5G, the distributed computing world is even more distributed. All that creates enormous opportunities for us.
Have to say that, we want to talk a little bit about innovation. We've got a few minutes left. Mike Bloomberg stopped by my desk. I was working. I have a huge pile of books. And he's like, do you read all of these? And I'm like, I try. I said, but one book I'm reading right now is Michael Dell's new book. And he's like, I know Michael. And he goes, really smart guy, really innovative guy. And it was just kind of interesting. And he talked about, how you reinvented your company. When it comes to innovation, reinvention, what are the technologies that you think we should be focusing on? What gets you excited? Is it crypto? Is it AI? Is it something? Is it the metaverse? What do you think is interesting? Because reading your book, you've been involved in the tech space since you were a kid. And I just wonder what really catches your attention now.
Yeah, the power of AI to, use all this data to upend and reinvent every part of our world and society is incredible. I think, there are going to be incredible innovations in the intersection of the biological and computational sciences. In all the areas you talked about.
Yeah.
It's hard to predict exactly how all these things are going to evolve. But, when you have these powerful ingredient technologies coming together, and look, you have an enormous amount of risk capital right now that's going after these problems and even harder hard tech problems. I think that the future is super bright for humankind.
That was Dell Technologies founder, chairman, and CEO Michael Dell. We interviewed him back in October. His new book out this year, Play Nice But Win, A CEO's Journey from Founder to Leader. I have to say, I had a hard time putting this one down.
We get a lot of books written by business leaders. This one was different.
It was. And I think what was fascinating was it went back in time and then it went forward in time. It was juxtapositioning the creation of his company with then taking it private again. It just went back and forth in a really cool way.
He also takes the gloves off in some parts.
He does. Yeah. I kind of love when people get to a point in their lives where they're like, I'm just going to tell you how it happened.
He names names.
He does name names. That wraps up the first hour of our Christmas weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week from Bloomberg Radio. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Tim Stenovet. Coming up in our next hour, more of our best from 2021, including Kathy Wood on her early days as a fund manager and her road to stardom in the financial world.
Plus, newly minted rock and roll Hall of Famer Gina Schock taking us behind the scenes with the Go-Go's. And then, Outlander star Sam Heughan on his latest pursuits, both on and off the set. Whiskey, anyone?
Yes. Also coming up, you'll hear from the former chairman and CEO of Google, Mr. Eric Schmidt. Yeah. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, I've heard of him. And, you know, you think about, you know, when he was at Google, right? This was a company that was really going through growing pains, slowly on its way to becoming what it is today. But, you know, he was often called, we joke about it, you know, the adult in the room. Like, there were a bunch of, you know, the guys who created the company, right? Brilliant. But they needed somebody to kind of formulate the company and help it on its longer term journey.
You know, we asked him that question, too, about other companies that perhaps need another adult in the room. Stay tuned to hear what he had to say.
Wow, really cool stuff.
This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news as it happens. Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Tim Stenovic.
Plenty ahead in our second hour of this special holiday weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Some of our biggest interviews, some of our favorites from 2021, including Kathy Wood of ARK Invest on the origins of her now world-renowned risk appetite. Someone who is always on the investment world radar and has been really gracious to us, giving us lots of time throughout the year.
And speaking of being in the spotlight, we're going to hear from two individuals in the entertainment space. Go-Go's drummer Gina Schock on her life as part of the groundbreaking all-female rock group. Also, Sam Heughan from the hit series Outlander on his award-winning and growing business portfolio. He's an author. He's an actor. He does a lot when it comes to charity and giving back. Yeah. And don't forget that whiskey.
No, don't. We're not. Really two fun individuals in the entertainment space. Looking forward to that. First up this hour, though, another titan of America's technology landscape. In our last segment, you heard Michael Dell's thoughts on the age of artificial intelligence. Well, our next guest has had a hand in bringing us to this point. He's got lots to say on where we go from here.
To help us understand the challenges that are facing humankind as this technology becomes more pervasive, Bloomberg cross-asset reporter Katie Greifeld and I spoke with Eric Schmidt, the co-founder of Schmidt Futures, also, of course, the former CEO and chairman of Google.
This change in the next 5 to 10 years is the beginning of an epical change in human history, similar to the Age of Reformation, where we went from the Age of Faith, where people basically just believed that whatever God said was correct, versus the notion of having reason. And the world where we're going to have ourselves and then inanimate, non-human intelligences helping us is a very different world than the one we're in today.
And bridge the gap between the world we're in today and the world we're heading into, where AI is a bigger part of it. Because, you know, when I think about AI, I struggle to think about how it will transform my day-to-day life. So if we go down that path, you know, 5, 10, even more years into the future, I mean, how do you see this shaping the world around us?
Well, most people, when they think about AI, they think of a killer robot, and that is precisely what
I wasn't going to say that, but yeah.
Yeah, we're not talking about that. What we're talking about is that you will have assistants. Today, you have an assistant in the form of Google. You have recommendation engines and so forth. Those are all AI-powered, by the way, the translations and so forth. That all works very well. What will happen in the next 5 or 10 years is you're going to have conversational assistants that are human-like, that you can ask questions and can make recommendations, and more importantly, generate new things. In our book, we talk about the achievement of AlphaGo, where computers developed new game strategies for a game that had been played by humans for 2,500 years that had never been discovered by humans. We highlight the discovery of a new antibiotic that could never have been done without using superhuman, supercomputer analysis with human collaboration to look through all the choices to find a new antibiotic that saves lives. And we also talk about these new language models, which are these immense systems where we build them and then we don't know what they know and what they really think. And it's called GPT-3. These are the beginning platforms of a transformation of the world around us. So the answer for you specifically, you're a reporter, you're in the news, you're inundated with information. Everyone is going to be pushing more and more stuff to you. You're going to be inundated. You're going to need a digital assistant who will help you prioritize what you need to do in your work as well as your whole life.
Okay, that sounds better than a killer robot.
Absolutely.
So to that end, you write in the preface, along with your co-author, is that the three of you differ to the extent in which you're optimistic about AI. Where do you fall in that?
Of the three of us, I'm the most optimistic, I think, because in my world, in my experience, we have these enormous opportunities with enormous downsides, and somehow we muddle through. If I told you that social media would become the primary attention source and information source for the most of the world, you'd say, great. What I didn't realize when we did social media, it would also be used to manipulate elections and manipulate people through falsehoods and misinformation and so forth. We're working on the latter. So when this next generation of much smarter systems come along, we better have a notion of what their ethics are. What are they promoting? When you put one of these things with your kid, who's obviously developmentally vulnerable, what happens if the thing has a hidden bug in it, like it's slightly racist or it has the wrong values? Every once in a while it says something inappropriate. Do you really want your child exposed to that in such an important role where this is the child's best friend?
Eric, I want to talk about the metaverse in the context of last week's rebranding of Facebook. What is the relationship between AI and the metaverse?
Well, the metaverse needs to be defined. As you know, the term was coined in 1992 by Neal Stephenson in a famous science fiction book. And most of us think that the metaverse is a world where, sort of similar to the movie Ready Player One, where you would move into a digital world that's everyone's smarter, more beautiful, faster, it's more fun, and it's really enjoyable. Facebook has not built that product yet, and so we have to assume that that's their direction. But it seems to me that changing the name of all of Facebook, which is 100,000 people and an enormous business, based on products that have not been announced yet, is a pretty big decision. And we'll see. Let's see how the products play out.
That's Eric Schmidt, the co-founder of Schmidt Futures and former CEO and chairman of Google, also the co-author of The Age of AI and Our Human Future, which he wrote with Henry Kissinger and Daniel Huttenlocher.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. We continue with some of our memorable conversations of 2021, including a catch-up with Kathy Wood, the founder, CEO, and CIO of ARK Invest. This is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
So 2021 gave us a chance to hit the road again and broadcast from some of our favorite events in the financial world. One of them was the Milken Institute Global Conference in Los Angeles. That was back in October.
The annual gathering of global leaders in government, finance, health, academia, philanthropy, and more returned to an in-person format after last year's event was scaled down and completely remote, of course, due to the pandemic.
Yeah, it really felt good to be back in person. It was scaled down, but nonetheless, great to be around people and actually do panels up on stage with individuals rather than virtually. We did spend three jam-packed days talking about the disruptions and innovations brought on by the global pandemic, along with social crises and economic hardships that we've really seen develop since last March.
And when you want to talk innovation and how to place your bets on the future, if there's one person you need to hear from, well, it's Kathy Wood. Carol sat down with the ARK Invest founder, CEO, and CIO at Milken to get the backstory behind the fund manager's rise to investment fame. I think important to note here, Carol, you've known Kathy for years.
Mm-hmm.
Back to when she started ARK, and you know, she wasn't a household name, at least in the investing world, like she is today.
Yeah, it was pretty fascinating. If I think about 70 years ago, I think it was, and she didn't have a lot of money, didn't have a new fund out yet, was just, you know, a new name in the space. And her ideas, though, this whole idea of disruption, innovation, you know, it's something we talk about pretty regularly now. But back then, it was a new idea.
After the tech and telecom bust, and then even more so after 08, 09, I began to see just incredible risk aversion, career risk, business risk, and everybody was worshiping the almighty index benchmarks. And that was not consistent with what we were doing at all. So we were becoming, I describe it as an otter duck,
yeah.
You know? And I also felt this was very bad behavior. I feel like maybe investing in tried and true is not wrong, but investing only in the past, I do believe is wrong, you know, because there are there is so much in the way of innovation evolving,
right.
And I did not feel like it could be funded appropriately in the public markets. The private markets were screaming, so valuations were crazy there. The same kind of stock was selling for a fraction of the valuation in the public markets.
Right.
And so I felt there was an arbitrage opportunity. Many people in the public world said, oh, those private valuations, those are gonna crash. We didn't think that was true. We thought the public market valuations were going to move up. So I felt that this focus on innovation had been lost, research lost,
right.
Investing lost in the public markets. And I said, we could fulfill a huge unmet need and change this misallocation of capital, which is all about the past, especially because of the explosive growth opportunities there are in the future.
So tell us about, and I know there's been a podcast you've done and there's been some writing, what was the aha moment that you said, I'm gonna do this differently? And I want you, if you don't mind, I mean, I know your faith is important to you,
mm-hmm.
and the name of your company is ARK.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that play into it?
Sure. So I remember walking into my home on a beautiful sun. I get these epiphanies on beautiful sunny days when I'm not really thinking about anything. But I walked into my home, beautiful sunny day, silence. Now, I had three children, two dogs, and a nanny, and it was complete silence because they were going to all be away for 2 weeks. First time ever in this house. And I walked into the kitchen, and I wasn't happy, but I wasn't sad. I wasn't even thinking about work. And I got the message loud and clear. You have to take all of the technologies that have disrupted other industries and start to disrupt your own and focus on the new creation.
It sounds like, and I want to stay here for a moment, I have faiths and beliefs that are very important to me. It sounds like your faith guides you in a lot of ways. How does it, as you look at these companies, make your investments, make your decisions, how does that play into it, Kathy?
Well, first of all, in terms of that aha moment, you know, many people would describe that as the force or the universe. I would call it the Holy Spirit. And so the Holy Spirit as a guide, you know, as much as we in the financial world would like to think we're in control, we're not. There are much bigger forces in control.
Some would say the Fed's in control right now a little bit.
No, not even the Fed's in control. So, and this idea of the new creation. In fact, it was after I described what the ecosystem that I wanted to put in place involving social media and giving our research away. And, you know, I wasn't even thinking about going viral in the way that we have gone viral. I was just thinking, how can we get our message out? Because we can't get it out through traditional channels.
Right.
Nobody believes in us.
Well, if you're going to do it differently, you're going to do it differently all the way.
All the way, all the way. And so we are seeking the truth as these new technologies evolve, all of them at the same time,
right,
and cause a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion, a lot of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt in our markets. And we're trying to allocate capital to its highest and best use. Do the right thing.
That was Kathy Wood. She's the founder, CEO, and CIO of ARK Invest. Her conversation with Carol took place at the Milken Institute Global Conference back in October. I was there live. This was a standing room only event because it was packed. And you know what?
What?
You got up there with Kathy. I think it was just after Steve Mnuchin was up there with our colleague Romain Bostic.
Yep, which is
not exactly an easy act to follow. But you did it.
Thank you. It was really nice to be there. And like both of us, we had so many good conversations. I think about those 3 days of broadcasts, you and I really talking to some really smart individuals. Everybody loved being in person. And I highly recommend folks go back and check out our podcast feed because those shows were pretty memorable. And I was so glad that we could be there. All right, still to come on Bloomberg Business Week, a new inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're going to shift gears a little bit, have some fun in this last 30 minutes of our special holiday broadcast. So a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer and also an award-winning actor, entrepreneur, and I guess I can say a man of the Scottish Highlands.
And our Best of 2021 Bloomberg Business Week Christmas weekend special, it takes us onto the stage with rock legend Gina Schock, also on set with Outlander star Sam Heughan. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
COVID-19 has changed how we live and how we feel. But now there are vaccines, and they are the first step that lets us get back to the things we miss most, like spreading the word without spreading concern, girls tripping instead of solo sipping, and talking smack with a side of mac and cheese. It's okay to have questions about COVID-19 vaccines. Now, get the facts. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org so you can make an informed decision when COVID-19 vaccines are available to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, we definitely got the beat this year. We've had some great interviews. And I got to say, being part of the Bloomberg Business Week team and family means we talk daily about the intersection of markets and business with every industry that's out there. And that includes arts and entertainment, which is why we wanted to catch up with an original member of the Go-Go's, the first all-female rock group to write their own songs, play their own instruments, and reach the top of the Billboard charts.
Drummer Gina Schock recently released her new book, Made in Hollywood, All Access with the Go-Go's. It's a personal account of the band that includes a treasure trove of photographs and memorabilia collected over the course of her 40-year career. This is an awesome book. The pictures alone are amazing.
It's gorgeous. It's really, really well done. And when we spoke with her back in November, she and her bandmates had just been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We wanted to know which artists she had looked to for inspiration along the way.
I am the ultimate fan, let me tell you. You know, I just adore them all. Music is my whole life, and it's always been, and I feel so lucky to be able to contribute. Meeting David Bowie was a huge thing in my life. Wow. I idolized him growing up and, you know, had the utmost respect. The guy was a genius. And I got to meet him three times, and that was super-duper cool. It was actually the first time I met him. The photo of us in the book is when he was doing the Sirius Moonlight Tour, and we actually got to open for him, too, I think, at Anaheim Stadium. That was very cool. But the first time I met him was in 1980, before the Go-Go's were even signed. We were playing at the Ritz in New York City. Check this out. We didn't have a record deal. We had just gotten back from England. We had been opening for Madness and the Specials over there. So we all had our boyfriends with us. So Madness were at our show. But we get done, and we go to the VIP section, and they're like, guess who was at your show? Who? Okay, David Bowie and his constant companion, Coco, Pete Townsend, and John and Yoko. Now, wow. Unfortunately, John and Yoko left during the encore, and yet in a couple months, he was gone. You know, that son of a bitch murdered him.
Right.
But the two of them had seen the show. That meant a whole lot to me. And Pete Townsend, that meant a lot. And then, of course, Bowie. And meeting him and talking to him, he was such a gentleman and so generous with his time. And, wow, what an incredible night that was for me. And, of course, opening for the Stones. I mean, these are things you dream of, you know. And, man, it's like having a little old Gina from Dundalk in Baltimore. Like, it's crazy stuff, guys. It's like your dreams do can happen. They can really happen. It's amazing what you can accomplish. It's all inside of you. You just have to stay focused and do the right thing. That's all. That's it.
Hey, Gina, what has it been like in 2021 getting back there on the road and doing it at a time when we're in the midst of a pandemic? How are you doing it?
Well, you know, it's been rough because the last 2 years we've had our tours canceled. We had last year we were having a tour, summer tour. This year was canceled. So fortunately, we are going to be doing some shows at the end of the year on the West Coast, which we're all really excited about. And then, of course, next year we're going to be doing shows with Billy Idol in the UK, playing like at Wembley and Leeds Arena, all these fantastic places to play. And then we're going to be doing more shows in the States. But on top of that, this year has just been incredible for us because it seems like everything's sort of coming to fruition. You know, our documentary really pushed people, I think, to recognize the band and know the band in a way that they hadn't prior to that. Also, you know, our musical, which was out on Broadway a couple of years ago, that's coming back. That's at the Pasadena Playhouse, like, in a week. And it's opening in Australia again, head over heels. That's really cool. And then the induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And then now I'm doing my book tour and my first photo exhibition. And, like, it's, wow.
Well,
it's great, guys.
Well, it's just, you know, it is interesting. And you really do think about the impact that you had. I mean, there's so many female musicians now. And if you think about, though, when you guys went out and did your thing, it wasn't commonplace.
Not so much.
No, right? Not so much. And, go ahead, please.
And, you know, I'm on, like, I'm checking Instagram out every day. There are so many girls that are playing drums now and shredding on guitar. There are so, you know, now the latest statistic is that there are more girls learning instruments than there are guys now to play. How do you like that one, guys?
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, that's the latest. And it's like really great. I'm hoping that we've had an influence on them. I feel that we have. I've heard that a lot. And it's, to me, the best gift that I could ever leave when I close my eyes on this planet is to think that I've inspired someone to step out of their comfort zone, perhaps, and do what they love to do.
That was legendary drummer Gina Schock, the author of Made in Hollywood, All Access with the Go-Go's. It's a tribute to the trailblazing female rock band, also now members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay, so if you won't sing We've Got the Beat, can you sing Vacation's All I Ever Wanted?
No. Lips are sealed.
Man,
not gonna happen. Done. You know, that would be my last. That would be like my last, you know, show on Bloomberg Business Week Radio.
No, you might get like more followers.
No, this is a radio voice, all right, not a singing voice.
So, okay. You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Coming up, we wind down our Christmas weekend special with a man of many talents, award-winning actor, best-selling author, and now a maker of fine whiskey, Outlander star Sam Heughan.
You can say it. No, favorite interview of 2021.
Okay, it was. Hands down.
You can say
I've shared it with the world.
Okay.
And I got more emails after sharing it.
That's up next. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic from Bloomberg Radio.
Winding down on this special Christmas weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week, some of our favorite interviews from 2021. Have to say, we are very lucky. We speak to amazing people. We have a lot of favorite interviews. We really appreciate the guests who join us throughout the year. Got to say, though, this next one, a lot of fun and full transparency. I'm a big fan.
You really are. I think that's okay. You know, full disclosure there. Yep. If you follow our next guest on social media, you'll see a lot of versatility. He stars in the popular streaming series Outlander. He's also an author, having recently published a follow-up to his New York Times bestseller, Clanlands, Whiskey, Warfare, and a Scottish Adventure Like No Other. You know what was also great about this?
What?
He was one of the first guests of the year to join us in the studio.
He really was, right?
Yeah.
That's a good point. I forget about that.
And it was a big deal to have him here in person.
It was, and it felt so good to have him in studio. And you're right, to have somebody back in there with us. His new book is entitled The Clanlands Almanac. He's also got TV and film projects on the horizon. He's got his own line of whiskey, even his own charity. Sam Heughan joined us, as Tim mentioned, in studio this past fall to talk about how he's managing all of that in the midst of a pandemic.
Business-wise, more than anything, it's delayed a lot of imports and exports, especially with our whiskey.
Did it complicate things?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think you've maybe seen the pictures of, you know, the container ships outside Long Beach. Things are just really slow, you know, globally. It's been tough. You know, we've been challenged with the cork for our stoppers in our bottles, you know, trying to get access
to that.
It's a
supply chain, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or just even getting a container to transport our whiskey across from the UK. So, yeah, it's been challenging.
What changes did you have to make as a result of these challenges? Did you have to raise prices? Did you have to change materials?
Or just be patient?
I think that's pretty much it. You know, people were waiting for our next release. We released last year, and then this is our biggest release. We wanted it to be out in time for, obviously, the holiday season, but it's finally here. We were actually only delayed a couple of weeks, so we're pretty fortunate.
How much fun are you having with this? And tell us about, like, taking it around and introducing it to people.
Yeah, so I'm really proud. Obviously, self-financed, self-realized, you know, I designed everything, you know, every aspect of the brand.
Self-finance, so you bootstrapped it all.
Yeah. So we haven't any investors. Huh. We've done it all ourselves. And as I said, it's our second round. We've won about seven double gold medals from various awards. I'm just really proud of it. It's my baby.
Can you talk about why you bootstrapped it and chose not to bring on outside investors? Did you not want to dilute the equity?
I think so. You know, I mean, firstly, it is a small, limited batch release. You know, it's hard to get our hands on enough of the product. Yeah. So we didn't need finance at the first. But then also, you know, just to retain the rights, to retain the majority share or control of it. And as I said, it is a passion project. So I really didn't want to give anything away. There may be a time when we do look at finance.
Are people knocking on the door?
We've definitely had conversations all. And you know, there will be a point where we want to really upscale and increase, and I think at that point investment would really help us.
Because it's interesting in the marketplace, you know, it's a crowded marketplace, but when you can create a brand that somehow has some interesting distinction to it, and I think this one is safe to say it does also taste good, you can really move ahead. What's been the response that you're hearing? And as you, because you're meeting with people in New York and elsewhere.
Yeah, well, so we're now available in, I mean, I think about 40 states. We're working on the rest of them, and we're working on Canada as well, and Europe. It's a whiskey that I wanted people to be accessible. You know, a lot of people haven't tried whiskey or don't know much about Scotch whiskey. This is a blend. There wasn't really a premium blend out there that I felt was comparable to like the Asian blends out there, which are really phenomenal. So we wanted to create something like that, modern, but also, you know, with a nod to our heritage. So we've got some great malt whiskey in here. And yeah, I think people's reaction has been really, really positive.
We did want to talk to you a little bit about what's it like on the set, because it looks like you guys have just an incredible group of people.
It is, yeah. We've been obviously on the show now almost, I think, about 8 years. We're in our sixth season is about to come out. And it really, it's we're this sort of real core ensemble of actors. And it's been good. I mean, this was the hardest year, definitely, you know, with obviously COVID situation, but also we were shooting in winter.
Right.
It was tough. I mean, it was really difficult, but a really strong season. And I think that's what brings you, or gets you through something like that. You know, your sort of friendship and your bonds, and with the crew as well. You know, it's like one big family.
What are the COVID protocols and how is it different this season than it was in previous seasons before we were talking about COVID each and every day?
Yeah, you know, so I worked on a movie as well during COVID, a movie called Text for You. Also, Men in Kilts shows, we were one of the first shows to shoot in the UK with the COVID protocols. For Outlander, it was different because it's such a big show. You know, we have so many extras, we're out in Scotland, so it did delay us by a number of months. But the protocols, you know, everyone was tested every day. We actually had a testing center in the production offices, which was amazing. They could do a rapid test, so you get tested every morning. We had bubbles.
You did have bubbles, right? This is what we heard from when we were talking as stuff came back.
So basically different, depending on sort of your level or what your function is in on set, you would then be in allocated a certain bubble,
Or what I really want to know, when you drink whiskey on the set, are you drinking real whiskey?
Absolutely, of course, all the time. Yeah.
I don't believe you. Wait a minute. You and I were talking, around the table here about your brand, the Sassenach. So is there more to come? Are you going to expand this?
Yeah, you put me on the spot. Yeah, well, you know, obviously.
You could say no.
Absolutely. You know, our tagline is unique spirits. So we are looking, you know, around the world for, you know, unique opportunities and really just shining the spotlight on, you know, great producers and collaborating with other people. So, but, you know, obviously the whiskey is our main priority. It's our first spirit. And we really want to establish that and let that grow as well.
One last one on the spirit. What else gets your attention?
We're a little obsessed.
In the spirits industry right now.
Oh, I mean, there's just, you know, I mean, the explosion of tequila obviously is really interesting. I've spent a lot of time over in Tequila Town, which is a really fun place. But, you know, you even look in the UK, I mean, gin is really big. It's kind of almost overpopulated now. But yeah, I'm really interested in just like these small producers. I mean, mezcal is just fascinating, you know, and it's hard for them to upscale. So I'd love to go to Oaxaca and spend a bit of time there.
How long do you think you might hold on to the brand before maybe something, you know, we talk about people being interested and we know certainly some of the bigger brands are always looking for new players, new entries. Mm. Do you think that the end game is that ultimately it becomes part of somebody's portfolio?
To be honest, I don't know. It's something, it's obviously very close to my heart. I poured so much of myself into this, so I want to retain it.
Okay.
But who knows in the future where that could go.
So let's talk about some of the other projects that you're working on. Mm. What is it like to either have a director reach out to you or a producer? Is it virtual still, or is things getting back to normal?
Yeah, it is. It is still kind of virtual. I just shot a TV show in the UK called Suspect, and that was all predominantly, you know, the read-through was done via Zoom calls, which is quite challenging, but it's great. You know, we're getting back on our feet. The movie TV industry is really, really flourishing at the moment. It's really busy.
It is really busy.
Yeah.
Well, we're seeing it certainly in and around New York too.
I mean, is it the best time to be a creative right now? You not only have streaming services just duking it out for content, for talent,
right,
but you also have established companies looking to get into streaming by creating more content. I mean, we are so hungry for content.
Yeah, we are. And I think myself, I'm pitching something at the moment, and it has been mostly to streamers because that's where who have the money and who are making things. But I mean, it's also good to see that movie industry and people are going back to the movies. You know, I went to see Bond recently. It was fantastic. And
you mean like in the theater? And
yeah,
actually going
just
back.
That shared experience, yeah. Which I think is something which we all miss as well. And I think hopefully, you know, also it will also have a life and we'll get people back into the movie theaters.
So Outlander, what can we expect in the new season?
Yeah, it's back early next year.
It's been
year.
A long dry spell.
It has. It's a different season. It's only 8 episodes. However, the episodes are longer. The first episode, I think, is an hour and a half. It's Outlander, so it's quite a dark season. There's a lot going on. I'm really excited. The first episode, especially, it's pretty strong.
It's one of the interesting things I think that you guys did, and we've had a lot of conversations about how you all come together and really portray reality. Like you don't hide some of the difficult things that go on, whether it's in a relationship or just certainly the history that was out there, and that's pretty impressive in terms of showing it and not kind of sugarcoating things.
Yeah, I think it comes down to Diana Gabaldon's books. You know, I think they're. You know, they can be pretty gritty in places. Yeah. So that's part of it. But I think also the show has tried not to shy away from certain subjects and it can put us in a sticky situation. But I think we really do go into, you know, trying to portray whether it's a victim of trauma or culture, for instance, the Native Americans, which we mm-hmm. play a large part in our season, this season.
It plays into so much kind of the world at large. If you think about the last couple of years, whether it's the pandemic or whether it's George Floyd, like things that have been in our society for such a long time, but you guys really kind of deal with that in a big way.
Yeah, but it's also showing America in its infancy, which mm-hmm. is really interesting. I didn't know a lot of this, you know, how this all happened and, you know, the British influence and it's fascinating. So it's just interesting that we're shooting, you know, in Scotland for America.
That's award-winning actor, New York Times bestselling author, entrepreneur, and philanthropist Sam Ewan. He was in our Interactive Broker studio back in October.
And that wraps up our special Christmas weekend edition of Bloomberg Business Week from Bloomberg Radio. Thanks so much for spending the holiday with us. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Tim Stenovek. Be sure to tune into Bloomberg Business Week Monday through Friday, starting at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio.
You can also watch our daily broadcast on YouTube. Just search Bloomberg Global News.
And check out our Bloomberg Business Week podcast. You can find it at Bloomberg.com, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Business Week is available on newsstands now at Bloomberg.com, always on the Bloomberg terminal.
You can also see me on Bloomberg Quick Take. It's available on Bloomberg.com/QT and streaming platforms like Roku, Apple TV, Samsung TV, and more. Have a great weekend and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everyone. Thanks so much always, always for listening. This is Bloomberg.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.